Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 509-727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Also, please do not forget to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel and TikTok so you can see Mr. John McKay's beautifully smiling face over there. And once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, happy New Year, our first show of 2025.
Yes, and I am resolution free.
You're resolution free, okay, because we've talked about that when we did our goal setting show in December. I thoroughly convinced you it does not matter.
Yeah, it doesn't. Well, you're aware of quitting Friday, aren't you?
Yes.
Ever heard of that? A week from yesterday?
Yes, quitting Friday. Yes, when the majority of people have finished that up, for sure. So.
Yeah, most people, it'll be January 10th. Most people abandon their resolutions on that day.
Yeah, okay.
That's why they call it quitting Friday.
Quitting Friday, okay. There you have it. So you have just solved that entire problem this year by not even worrying about it.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, like the government, I have continuing resolutions.
Okay. Good. Excellent. Well, one of the things we like to do is we always like to start off with our crazy celebrity house story. Mm-hmm. And this week, you could purchase Bob Dylan's former New York City townhouse came on the market for $7.25 million in what's known as the Turtle Bay Gardens townhouses. So listen to who's lived at these townhouses over the years. Mary Tyler Moore, Katharine Hepburn, E.B. White, and then we just mentioned Bob Dylan, among many others who have lived in this neighborhood, like absolutely iconic townhouses. And what's cool about this townhouse and the 20 that it's grouped with is they have a park courtyard in the middle. So they surround a courtyard, which you do not find in New York very often.
No.
And then what else I thought is super interesting is, and also not found in New York very often, especially if you think of all the skyscrapers and everything, this particular property has 7 wood-burning fireplaces.
Ooh.
So, like, actual, I mean, it would be difficult to find those in New York City. And what I also thought was interesting about a townhouse like this, which would be hard to get used to living, it's a 5,000-square-foot townhouse.
Mm.
But it's only 19 feet wide.
Oh, so it's like 4 stories.
Yeah, 5. It's like 5 stories.
Wow.
5 stories.
It's like that house in Home Alone.
Yes, absolutely. And so it is a really cool, classic-looking property. They've done, of course, over the years, massive amounts of remodeling.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous property, but is very, very unique from what I normally come to with the New York properties.
So, yes, and no doubt the new movie about Bob Dylan is going to spur some interest.
Okay, that's exactly what I was thinking. I think I saw that come across in an advertisement on Prime or Netflix, and that's what
we're seeing here. And then we're doing fantastic programs, like I already mentioned, with 77,000 kids in PGA Junior League, an all-time high. And then also the neat story about PGA Junior League is the diversity, right? With the people of the young kids of color in that program, and our girls are representing close to 30% in that program. And that's going to help continue to grow that when we're seeing youth and women and people of color is the highest growth rate in the game today. And it's the PGA professional that's at the center of all that, at the grassroots and the ground level, helping to grow that.
It's so exciting, Derek. And I mean, when I think back about your career, and you started in you know, small town Malone, New York, but you were down at Sawgrass. You have seen, you've also been the president of the PGA of America. Your resume is loaded, but you've seen this thing from a lot of different windows.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, and I think that will help me on the governance side of being the CEO here is that, you know, coming from a small town, and even though we had a very busy busy club in Malone, New York. It was a semi-private facility where we had, you know, 800 plus members paying less than $1,000 a year to play all the golf they wanted there. And then I had a short stint at Liberty National, which is one of the most expensive clubs in the world and very private. So I saw it there, and then that's where I started running championships from the club side. So I've seen really the championship running the President's Cup there at Liberty National, and then for the last 7 years running the Players Championship at TPC Sawgrass. So you're right. I mean, you know, one thing with me, Jay, is that I only look forward. I never look backward. I didn't really realize my career, if you will, until I got into this process here, and people, you know, were asking me about this and that. And I'm like, I guess my experience does line up well to be the CEO of the PGA of America, because, you know, I can relate to what our 31,000 strong do in their career day in and day out. But then also I've seen the championship side, which is a big part of what the PGA of America does, both for our PGA members. We run lots of great PGA member events throughout the year. And when, you know, 20 qualify for the PGA Championship, 35 qualify for the Senior PGA Championship. And then we have, I think, eight or 12 get to qualify for the KPMG Women's PGA Championship on the women's side. So, you know, having all that experience, I think, helps me navigate, or will help me. I'm in, week two here at headquarters, or as we like to say, home quarters of the PGA. And so I think it'll help me, to be able to pull on those experiences of my career to be successful in this role.
Derek Sprague is the CEO of the PGA of America here on Golf with Jay Delsing. You mentioned that you always look forward, but I am curious about the rollback of the golf ball. Where do you stand with that, and how the PGA of America is getting ready to brace that in a few years?
Yeah, so that's, you know, we talked a lot about that at the PGA show, and I've been in contact with the USGA on that, and they provided me with some more information. And I guess my biggest concern with that is, you know, one, the, you know, I don't know too many recreational golfers that want to hit it shorter. Probably there's a number of professional golfers that don't want to hit it shorter either. And, you know, I'm also concerned for our PGA professionals, the implementation of this rule, because it's going to be the PGA member that's going to have to be governing this rule at the local level. Like, what are we going to do with the secondary market golf balls that, you know, okay, Jay Delsing tees it up in the club championship. I'm going to have you empty your entire bag on the first tee to say, okay, which balls are conforming and which ones aren't. And then, you know, am I going to follow you, you know, and make sure you don't find a ball in the woods, because, you know, millions of golf balls are not always landing in the fairway each year. So that's just one example.
Especially out of Jay Delsing's bag, and not landing in the fairway, Derek.
Exactly. So, you know, that's one example of a concern. So I just want to, I'm very collaborative type leader. I'm working with, I'll be meeting with the USGA and the RNA and discussing what that implementation looks like, and if there is any variations that we can discuss to make it easier for our members. Because, you know, and just like, likewise, without any ball rollback, it's the PGA member that is administering these events at their clubs, you know, around throughout the country here. And they're the ones that need to have clarity on how they're going to govern this and how they're going to implement these changes. So it's, time will tell. But I look forward to working with the USGA and the RNA and the PGA World Alliance, who I met with at the PGA show, which represents 60,000 plus PGA members around the world. They have the same concern as we do on this side of the pond, as they do on the other side of the pond, that their PGA members are, you know, going to be in the middle of governing this rules change. And it's, I see it being really challenging, because everybody needs a golf ball in their bag. And we went through this with the long putter back in, I think, 2013 or 2014, somewhere in that time frame. And that's a little bit easier, right? A lot of fewer people use the long putter, and it's very visible. You can see if they're anchoring or not anchoring. Although, you know, I know some people would debate that too. But the golf ball, everybody's using that, and it's a little bit tougher to implement and to govern.
Gosh, Derek, it's got to be, I don't know kind of what the word is. You kind of think of Godsmack almost when you think about how you're thrust right in the middle of this, you know, these entities. These are people that I'm sure as a kid you looked up to and thought, you know, holy smokes, the Royal and Ancient and the USGA, and now you're at the table with these guys. It's got to be thrilling and probably a little overwhelming at times.
Yeah, you know, it's I've been in the game a long time, Jay, and I think, you know, certainly I do look up to them. I respect all these organizations, and like I said, with my leadership style, I want to be at the table with them and have meaningful discussions. And certainly, we're never going to agree, or rarely going to agree on some of these topics. But as long as we have a full understanding and thorough discussion and a full understanding of how it affects our 31,000 strong here, you know, I'm sure we can find ways to work together, but we just got to have those meaningful discussions. And I think that's what we're going to attempt to do in short order here in the coming weeks and months with the governing bodies.
Derek Sprague is our guest CEO of the PGA of America. Not too far away, it's the Ryder Cup. What are the preparations like in the next few months as you get ready for one of golf's biggest stages?
Yeah, well, we got just a great championship season this year with, you know, starting out with the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow and then the Senior PGA at Congressional. And then we're bringing the KPMG Women's PGA Championship right here to our home quarters here at PGA Frisco. So there's a lot of buzz here already on that. And then, like you said, we'll culminate with the Ryder Cup at Bethpage in New York and out on Long Island. So just a great championship season lining up. It's always exciting when it's a Ryder Cup year and a domestic Ryder Cup at that. The preparations are going very well. Corporate hospitality is an all-time high. Ticket sales, obviously, are an all-time high. And it's going to be passionate crowds in New York. And we'll have, I'm sure, passionate European fans as well to make it really a dramatic and epic Ryder Cup this fall.
Well, being a New Yorker, you know passion. Those guys are going to take this thing to a new level. And Derek, I don't think our listeners, if they haven't attended a Ryder Cup, don't really appreciate the degree of patriotism that they'll see, especially on our soil.
That's a good point. And, you know, we opened the show telling you about the story of the Olympics, right? So I was a young kid going to those Olympics back in 76 and in 1980, and maybe that's where my patriotism was really born. Because even though it was tough for me to sometimes see the event going on or the particular play or whatever, the energy and the electricity in the air of people rooting for their countrymen or countrywoman, whether it's the USA or other countries around the world, really is something special. And if you have not experienced an Olympics or a Ryder Cup, to your point, it's really something at another whole level. And I was fortunate enough to be president back in 2016 when golf came back into the Olympics after quite a hiatus in 1904, I think was the last time it was played. And again, it was like immediate, right? Like when those players got on the tee from the United States of America and the national anthems played during medals ceremonies or whatever, that is meaningful. And it really makes you reflect on how lucky we are to, you know, to live in the United States and to cheer on our fellow countrymen.
Derek, much was made recently about the player pay and the Ryder Cup, and we know that the PGA of America has made a substantial step up. For me, Derek, I'm tired of talking about the men's game and money. I get it. I mean, there's a lot on the line here and things like that, but gosh, man, I just want to get back to the game and let the dollars just, you know, be what they are.
Right. I mean, and I feel similar to you, Jay, but I think, you know, the big winner, the way we structured it, the way our board structured it, is that charity is going to be the ultimate winner here, because we increased that number significantly with it going to charity. And then quite a few people have already mentioned, including Captain Bradley, you know, saying that he's going to donate the whole thing. So I think at the end of the day, this is going to be a win for charity. And, you know, we're really excited about that. And I think the players, to your point, are hearing that as well from the fans and from other people in the industry, and they're stepping up, doing the right thing, donating the entire amount to charity, and I think that'll be good for the game.
Derek Sprague is our guest, CEO of the PGA of America. There's been so much attention made about the pace of play when you're watching the PGA Tour, especially on television. They want to see more action. How can you improve upon that, and what are those discussions like to improve pace of play?
We haven't had many of those discussions here at the PGA of America yet, or at least I haven't been involved with those. I'm sure Kerry Haig who's our chief championships officer and has been a long time employee of the PGA of America, the best in the business. Of course, I'm biased, but you know, I've heard that from a number of people. But I'm sure we'll be working with the PGA Tour and seeing what they plan to do, if anything, on that. The LPGA just came out with their pace of play plans, but you know, it's something that we have to pay attention to. The fans, you know, don't want to, you know, see it take forever to play out there, and other sports like baseball are trying to speed it up. So it's a hot topic right now, and hopefully the players get the message that they have to be fan centric, and you know, we want them to hit great shots, but do they need to take a long time to hit those great shots? And we've all played behind folks right on the golf course that are like, what are they waiting for? And then they duff it or, you know, hit a bad shot. And you're like, there, why'd they wait that long? So I think there's got to be a happy balance going forward where we can make sure that the game's in a good spot and people enjoy watching it as well as playing it.
Because we're basically in the entertainment business, right? I mean, our fans are golf fans, but they want to be entertained. And when I think of entertainment, can you talk a little bit about what people can expect when they come down to Frisco? Because we've heard that this entity, we've got the golf courses, we've got the town center, just on and on. I think with Omni, this is something that people, it's almost become a destination.
It really has, and we just had a great meeting with our partners from Omni yesterday, and talking about, you know, making each other successful, and you know, between the beautiful 500 plus room hotel that the Omni folks have, and then our home quarters on the other end.
Back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. Today we've been talking about attributes that make a great buyer's agent when you're looking to pick and hire an agent for a purchase in 2025. Before we jump into the next five that I have down on my list today, mm-hmm. I've got a great pick three. So if you would like to purchase one of these, it would be fantastic. Pick number one we put on the market, 1745 Duluth Street in Richland. This is a four-bedroom, three-bath, 2,500-square-foot home. And this is in that North Richland, mature trees, a third-acre lot. Mm-hmm. Fantastic, fantastic location. It's got a new roof on it, fresh interior paint. The kitchen was redone with slab granite counters. Lots of cabinets, full backsplash, just a really, really well done kitchen. Family room off the kitchen is a great room for gatherings, corner gas fireplace, and then you've got a big, big fenced backyard. So that property coming in, one of these North Richland iconic properties, coming in at $545,000. So ooh, great property there. Pick number two, I'm going to take you over to Southridge in Kennewick, 6258 West 32nd.
Okay.
This is a three-bed, two-bath, 1,766-square-foot home. Great room, has huge soaring ceilings, floor-to-ceiling tiled fireplace, custom-built-in cabinets. Then you go to an open-concept kitchen with a waterfall quartz island, quartz countertops, full-height backsplash, built-in stainless steel appliances, awesome, beautiful kitchen. And then you've got split bedroom floor plan, privacy for the primary suite, separate tiled shower, and a big walk-in closet. That coming in Southridge at $509,900. And then pick number three in Kennewick as well, 5731 West 16th Avenue in Kennewick, three bed, two bath, 1,500 square feet. This is in Creekstone, very well-maintained neighborhood. You've got big living area, bright, bright, spacious, with a corner gas fireplace. The kitchen has granite counters, big island, dining bar, stainless steel appliances, and a pantry here as well. Private primary suite, attached bath with dual sink vanity, walk-in closet. Absolutely awesome property in a very central location. And look at the price on this one, $415,000. That gets you into Creekstone. Plus, you have the parks and the amenities there taken care of by the HOA. Great, great. So there's some great options out there. Their interest rates have kind of settled down a little bit. And so there's some really good options as we go into what will be the latter half of the winter market.
Yes.
But really, if the weather holds like this, like I'm knocking on wood right now, it's been really, really good for sellers in this situation and this market right now. In general, I would say this is fabulous weather for real estate this time of year. So with that, and you decide to pick an agent to go out, look at homes with, hire to help you buy, what are some of the great attributes that you're looking at from that agent? And the next point that I wrote down is that a great buyer's agent will have perspective on specific neighborhoods. Like, for instance, in that pick three we just talked about, you've got an HOA in Creekstone. A great agent will know, what does that entail? What are those dues? What do people think of that? What is that like? You go and look at other neighborhoods like Canyon Lakes. What's happening with the golf course? Do they know what the situation is there? What does that look like? Or maybe somebody's looking at a neighborhood like Country Ridge out in Richland that has a lot of green space and green belts. Do they know what that adds to the value of homes in that neighborhood and what that means to a buyer? So a great agent is going to have insight for you on those specific neighborhoods.
Yes.
The next thing that I wrote down is, as you get more serious about the houses that you're looking at and you're whittling the list down to your last couple few that you're very interested at and potentially making an offer in, a great buyer's agent is going to come to you with the history of those houses that you are looking at and showing. What do I mean by that with the history? Well, not just the sold prices, because like anybody can go on Zillow and look that up.
Yeah.
But what's the history? Has that home sold every 2 years for the last 8 years? Why is that home selling every 2 years? Have they gone back and looked into what that history is like a little bit?
Is the house haunted?
Yeah. Is the house haunted? Who was the original builder of that house? Mm-hmm. What type of reputation does that builder have in the market? And all of these details can make a big difference. What's the tax information on the house? I've had a lot of buyers want to know, like, why is the tax value of the house less than this market value? What does that mean? And what's the discrepancy, if there is a discrepancy, with the assessor's office? Here's one we've been getting a lot lately. Why is the utility bill so high? Why is the electric bill so high? And then a great buyer's agent is going to have called on that, and they're going to know the answer to that. Well, the previous owners had two electric cars. And they charged them every night in their garage. And so we've started to see weird utility bills because of different trends that are happening in the market. And so these are the type of things that are going to help a buyer make a final decision when it gets down to it. The next thing that I wrote down is that a great buyer's agent, you're not going to see a great buyer's agent run around our market trashing other real estate agents in the market. And why do I say this? Because a great buyer's agent is going to have a relationship with other agents you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even talking about at the same firm. I'm talking about other firms. The way they interact with other agents in the market is going to be so that they can help their buyers get better deals.
Yes.
And you can still advocate and negotiate for your client's best needs and interests. And I put down, in a way that remains respectful to the other agents. Like, you don't have to absolutely, you know, trash them, destroy what they're doing for their client. I've seen too many times, I've seen an agent come back from a showing or an interaction with another agent, and too many times I've seen them say, that other agent is horrible. They're an idiot, you know, which they might be, but it's pretty rare in that mm-hmm. situation. Most of the times when we dig into those situations, what we see happening is it might not be that agent that's communicating it. That might be their client. It might be their seller. And so are they necessarily, is that person an idiot? That's a, you know, disrespectful thing to say to them. Likely not. Maybe have they not had a good enough critical conversation with their seller? Potentially. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to trash that agent for that situation. You can ask the right questions. You can inquire. You can go back and talk to them in a respectful way to where you find out it might not be the agent that's saying these things, but the client that is forcing them to say those things. And I can't tell you how many times we've figured that out with people to where I've investigated in or talked to other brokers. And I'm like, hey, you know, the agent wasn't trying to do X. It was their client was telling them to do X. They were trying to accomplish Y. So really just having calm relationships with those people and those agents can make a big difference. Next point that I wrote down is a great buyer's agent has had additional training from just passing their license. They've done things other than just going to the state, passing their license, and then running out and trying to sell houses. Until they get the experience they need, they surround themselves with a good team that has that experience. Then you see these great agents, they start to take higher level classes. Mm-hmm. They take classes that are specific to negotiating. They read great negotiating books. And some of these even come with designations. They go and get a higher level of designation to put on their license. So all of these things you will see great agents do. I preach this next point so often to my team. And number 9 that I wrote down is a great buyer's agent 100% is going to understand how to communicate well. So there was an article a couple months ago, and time goes so fast, it might have been a year or two ago. There was an article that came out in Forbes magazine.
Okay.
That listed the three biggest complaints about agents, real estate agents. Number one, they lie. That was the number one complaint in the Forbes article. Number two is they're lazy. Mm-hmm. And number three is that they don't communicate well. So if you put that into perspective, it's impactful to see this list that communication ranked almost as high as just lying to me. Like, so you might be honest and you might be a hard worker, but if you're not communicating well in that situation, it's going to be just as bad as if you lied to somebody, a client in that situation. So what can you do? You can send out confirmation texts or emails like looking forward to seeing you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. If it's been a week since you talked to them, you can call people on the phone and double check things. If you're unsure, you can get clarity from having a phone conversation with somebody and then following that up with an email that says, just so that we're on the same page.
Yes.
There is a number of things that you can do. You can give somebody an agenda for when you're going to go to an appointment with a builder. Here's what you can expect at this appointment. When you communicate well in that situation, you are going to garner a lot of trust and respect from clients. So a great buyer's agent will have a high level of communication. I didn't even bother to put the other Forbes ones on the list about lying and laziness. I'm just assuming that we're starting with honesty and hard work.
Yes.
But maybe I shouldn't based upon this study. But it was just, it was so impactful for me to see that on that list. And then the last thing that brings this all together is that a great buyer's agent is going to understand the value of a lifelong relationship. Like, a lot of my best agents come back to me and say, you know, January was great because I got 4 new friends. Mm-hmm. And what do they mean by that? It's because they sold 4 houses And in every one of those cases, they made a relationship impact with those people. And they're like, so like now they talk to them and communicate with them as if they were friends and had a relationship with them. And so the great agents will understand that and treat things that that way. So if I had to sum up this top 10 list, I just said with your buyer's agent, when you make a choice to buy in 2025, pick a good one. And then communicate with them constantly.
Yes.
And that is going to sum up what is going to make your home buying experience way, way better. Forbes told us what the alternative was. Yes. And so we don't need that. So that really boils down to it. We would love to be a part of that journey in 2025. If you have any questions about what that looks like, go to kenmoreteam.com, shoot us a message, and we'll be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Our house in the middle of-